Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. And today's show, it's a little bit on the sad side because of the subject overall that we have to deal with. But hopefully, with the intervention that we're going to be talking about, we'll be able to be happy at the end. We're going to be talking about firearm storage today. We got great guests with us. Stay tuned just for in a second. We'll get to them. We have a great crew, as always, that helps us with our shows. Maddie Levine-Wolf, Aaron Collins, Deandra Howard, Matthew Campbell, Sheridan Nygaard, all do our background research, our marketing, and get the shows out to you, the listening audience. So thank you to all of them. They've been with us since, well, actually for a long time now. And the show is closing in on our third year. So this is exciting. Also with us is Dr. Barry Baines, who's our medical advisor, has been with us for a while now and provides a medical twist to many of the questions that we hope can lead to some interesting discussions. So Barry, thanks for being with us. And of course, there's Clarence. Clarence is my trusted colleague in putting these shows out to you. And it's been a pleasure working with him. He's a great, great friend and colleague. So Clarence, thank you. Today, firearm storage. We have Dr. Tom Cockey. Tom has been with us on a couple of other shows because Tom is involved in a lot of, in his career, actually, besides being a physician. He's been involved in many public health related issues that he and I have some history together with. We'll touch base on that in a second. He's the medical director of well-being at Health Partners. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Tom recently retired or still connected. Recently retired, but still, I know he's still connected. If you know Tom, he'll be connected. He obtained his medical degree from the University of Minnesota School of Medicine and trained in internal medicine at the Royal Victoria Hospital in Montreal and the North Carolina Memorial Hospital in Chapel Hill. Trained in cardiovascular diseases and preventive cardiology at the University of Minnesota and has been involved in many, many, many public health related issues. He's unique in the sense that he carries on one hand the public health charge and on the other hand the medical torch. So Tom, thanks for being with us once again. We also have Kathleen Anderson, a clinical social worker and volunteer educator at Be Smart. And hopefully at the end of the show, we're all going to be a little smarter, but we'll get into the logistics of that. The Be Smart campaign educates on the importance of secure firearm storage to prevent childhood firearm injury and death. And she volunteers her time. So, wow, noble. Very, very noble. And Thea Williams. Who I just met, but it's interesting because I would almost call Thea an intervention person. You know, this is her background is she works with people who unfortunately have experienced gun violence, and in hospitals in metropolitan area in Minnesota, and. You know, what you do, just first of all, on one hand, it's sad because we have to have people like you, and fortunately, we do. And on the other hand, it's a point of contact for true education going forward. So on one hand, we're really trying to do primary prevention here, getting people to be smart and lock up their firearms accordingly. And on the other hand, it's what we call secondary prevention after an event has happened. Well, okay, now let's get to at least smart, okay, going forward. So Thea will tell us about the work that she does, but thank you for being with us, all of you today. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you for all having right. us.
So here we go. Who wants to kick it off here? You know, Clarence, Thea, Kathleen, tell us about the immediacy and the real problem that we're facing right now.
So I want to jump in here. And I think, yeah, we can, I think we have a real opportunity. I know we have a real opportunity to do something about gun violence. And that's because 60% of people who are killed by a gun are killed in a home. While it's the mass shooting at a nightclub or in a sporting event or a school that really upsets us and we fear, the fact of the matter is 60% of deaths from guns occur in a home and 55% are suicides. Okay, so if there's a common vector here, there's one vector, and that is a fireable firearm. And if that is not available, those 60% of the deaths, we, you know, basically, if it's if those guns are secured, we have more than a 50% reduction in deaths from guns. So it's within our grasp if we choose to do something. But we do have to choose to do something. And I learned about Be Smart about a year ago, then really tumbled to it. And you know, Be Smart for Kids, it's besmartforkids.org, is smart. But we as common citizens, we both can do something, and it will happen if we do something. We must do something. And I'm going to ask Kathleen to talk about Be Smart for a minute.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Kotke. So the Be Smart program was launched in 2015 to promote responsible gun ownership in order to reduce child gun deaths. We, as Dr. Kotke mentioned, a lot of attention is paid to mass shootings, school shootings, but the reality is that the majority of gun deaths are happening in the home. And so many of those are preventable when children get a hold of a gun, they often go off, and one in four times they are fatal. And we know that with the gun ownership rates that we have across the country, if people are not securing them storily, children across the country are at risk, and they're at risk of bringing those guns into schools, to play dates, and endangering others in the process. And so our message is very simple. In order to reduce gun violence across our country, if you have a gun in the home, storing it securely, by which we mean unloaded with the ammunition stored separately. And that if you don't have a gun in the home, asking about guns in the homes that your children visit. And so, whether that's grandparents, aunts and uncles, babysitters in the early childhood years, play date, neighbors' houses for play dates, and then certainly in the teen years as well. And just having that a part of your normal check-in when you're preparing for a play date. Go
So
ahead.
I love the acronym Be Smart. It's secure. Secure your firearms, locked, unloaded, ammo, separate, locked. Model, do it. Ask whether all firearms are secured. And practice. There's three scenarios. You ask either text or email, or I'm an old goat, so I actually talk on the phone. One is you ask, are your firearms secured? Yep, they're all secured, everything's safe, they're locked up. Second is, are your firearms secured? No, I keep one, I really need one for protection. Well, let's go to the park instead. Or why don't the kids come over here? And then the third one, which just sneaks up on people, is you ask, and the response is, why would you ever think I'm such a beast that I would have a gun in my home? And you have to have a response of that well, there's 40% of American homes have a gun in it, and I just don't know. And so it's better to be safe than sorry. And you may have to practice that in front of the mirror, but practice it, be prepared, because I know one of my colleagues who asked and got that third response was so taken aback that she stopped asking, and which is really unfortunate.
Yeah,
So what a so a couple hang on one sec, Kathleen. So what comes to mind for me is I don't know, as first of all, I don't own a gun, but I don't know who does own a gun. So, like, if I go to anyone's house, what am I just supposed to do? Do you have a gun? Oh, okay. Well, it's not like a conversation starter. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like if I see if so, it's like, how is it that I engage in that conversation with somebody? If I Does that make sense? It's
Oh,
just like, I mean,
Fia, how do
okay.
you do
How do you do it?
it?
Or why would you do it? Go ahead. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Or Thea.
Or Thea, go ahead.
Personally, if I feel comfortable allowing my kid to go to someone's house, right, then I should feel comfortable having that conversation because there are other avenues in which they can get hurt. So I would want to know who's going to be there. And if I can ask you who's going to be there, I can ask you, well, do you carry guns in your home? Do you have guns in your home? I don't know. That's just a natural conversation for me. If I was to get a response, well, why do you think I'm such a terrible person? I'd say, well, it's not that you're a terrible person, it's that guns can be legally held in the home. And I'm just trying to figure out if that's something that you practice. Because if you do, then I would think, I would want my child to maybe play outside, or maybe your kids can come over here because I don't have guns in my home.
Well, and another thing, Dr. Stan, I think parents, as their children are starting to go over to other people's houses that aren't family members, where you can't, I don't think anyone should be assuming whether or not there's a gun in the home, but I think we tend to with family. But it is natural and common now to ask questions about, if there was going to be any transportation, you would ask about an age appropriate, weight appropriate car seat, or be, you're doing that dance of, oh, do you need to borrow my booster? We have safety conversations already. We talk about pets, allergens. We should be talking about screen time and internet access. I know I don't want my children going over to a house where kids are on YouTube for hours, right? Like, so modern parents are kind of getting in the habit of asking these questions, and it not necessarily being awkward, but just sort of a part of the getting to know you, getting to know whether I trust you to be over my child over in your space. And we don't get defensive about about whether I have a dog, right? Like, that's not that's not a safe, that's not something to get defensive about. And part of what we're trying to normalize is that asking about a gun shouldn't be a taboo. It's not a political question, it's a safety question. And we actually got this feedback from our healthcare providers that not even focusing on whether there's a gun in the house, but actually phrasing the question, if you have guns in the house, how are they secured? So I'm not asking you necessarily, like, are you a gun owner? Are you not a gun owner? I'm just saying, hey, if you are a gun owner, how do you secure your guns? And in our experience, most gun owners are responsible gun owners. They're very proud, especially if they've got kids in the home. They're eager to talk about the lengths they go through to keep their kids safe. And it's a point of pride for them. And that's something that we really want to celebrate in these conversations, is that that's the goal, is that people that are choosing to have guns in the home are storing them securely and taking this very seriously. That's what we want to highlight. If someone gets cagey or defensive, then that's not a house that you want your kid going to, because all it takes is one curious game of hide and seek to end in a tragedy. And you can't, there's no going back from that. You know what I mean? Like, there's it, it's that's that. And so on the other side, I know Dr. Kutke asked, like, how I ask the question. I ask it as a part of all of those safety questions. I also am working on volunteering that information. So, if someone's coming to my house, I say, just a heads up, we have a small dog. He's very friendly. No guns in our house. Are there any allergens that I need to be aware of? And just kind of sandwiching it in with those other safety questions to help normalize it as well.
Barry, go ahead. Thanks,
Yeah, so
Kathleen. Go ahead.
Stan, I'm going to give you the script, but Kathleen actually did a great job on that. But the idea that from a public health perspective, if 40% of people own guns, okay, I think sitting here, I don't own one. Stan, I know you don't own one. I not asking gonna ask everybody, but if you don't own one, it's highly likely that people that you know own a gun. And so, just from that perspective, getting put off by, what do you mean, do I own a gun? But I think it's the idea that the focus isn't that you own a gun, it's that it's securely stored. And the piece I wanted to bring in, the problem from a suicide perspective is that gunshots are highly lethal, and so suicide attempts using guns oftentimes are very successful. And that's part of the issue. I mean, there's other ways that people do attempt suicide, but many of them you have time, and you could save the person. And oftentimes, it's depression or whatever the etiology of that is. But that's the thing to me, is that the lethality, how lethal gunshot wounds are, not only for suicide but also accidentally killing somebody, just make it critically important. And I'm gonna, the other thing is, we could say, well, I just listened to this great show on Health Chatter about firearm safety, and yeah, I'm gonna ask my friends that about it, just to hear. And I would imagine that this is even more critical if you have little kid, if you have young children going around, although oftentimes it's older adults, aunts, uncles, grandparents who are minding the kids. And so I think, no pun intended here, everybody's fair game on gun, for secure firearm storage, because it is ubiquitous. 40% of the population own firearms. Well, it is like an accident waiting to happen, isn't it? So if we don't do something, and I like, even in our beginning conversation here, that this isn't a hard bar to get over to start the conversation. It's not accusatory. It's not judging people. It's about practices. And like I say, we have car seats, bicycle helmets. Is another one that has changed. So I think we have a good way to get some traction here.
Clarence, go ahead.
Some of the resistance people have to this issue. I mean, you talk about the death of a child, but there are people that actually resist. You talking to them about their guns or their stories. Like, what are some of the things that come up? Why people just, I'm not going to do it.
So let me jump in on that. And there's a couple of things. One is, I need my firearm. I'm afraid of a home invasion. Yeah. I would argue that in that case, you really want, there's biometric lock boxes that open in a flash. And you want to know that that pistol is in that box, and that because I didn't have a chance to look this up, but many years ago, they did a survey in Austin, Texas. They called people out and said, do you have a pistol in your home? Yep, I got a pistol. Where is it? It's in my bedside table. And they said, well, would you go look and verify that? They went, came back and said, it's not there. Where was it? It was in the kid's backpack. But if you really fear a home invasion, you don't want that weapon going walkabout on you. You want to know where it is, and it's in that biometric lockbox, $100 at Dick's Sporting Goods or Menards or wherever you want to go. But you want that that pistol. Yep. And the other thing, we've changed. Don't you know? Our group, when I was at the University of Minnesota, was one of the groups that started eliminating smoking in hospitals. When I was in training, you could smoke in bed recovering from a myocardial infarction. And we had, I remember somebody said, I found, they said, your smoke-free program doesn't work because I found a cigarette butt in the back stairwell of the parking ramp. Well, no, it does work. And There will be people who resist. Probably 5% of the population will blow it off. But the other 95% will do it, and our kids can live with that.
Yeah. You know, Thea, I've got a question for you. Tell me some happy things, okay? Because I know that you're involved with intervention. Tell me a something that you've heard that you're really happy about, given the fact that you're dealing with this all the time. But do people circle back to you and say, because of you, I'm making damn sure that our firearms are secure. Do you hear good things coming from this?
Circle back sometimes. I think the best thing that I feel I hear is when I'm at an event in my community and I have loads of gun locks and I'm passing them out, and people want to actually know how to use them. How do I apply them to my gun?
Good,
That makes
good.
me happy. When people want to know, well, they take my gun lock and they say, I don't own a gun, but my cousin does, or my brother does, or this person I know does, and they take them and bring them to family members. That makes me happy because I know that I'm doing something that could actually be effective.
Okay, so the other thought that came to my mind was point of sale. Okay, so use me as an illustration. I want to go to wherever, Skeels or Dick's or wherever, and I want to buy a gun. Doesn't point of sale have some kind of a responsibility when they sell you the gun to give you education, information, sell you a device to make damn sure that that device is locked up safely in your home? So
So
what,
Stan,
go
I
ahead.
want to jump in on that, and I think that's the wrong question, because
Okay.
that's saying, oh, this is somebody else's problem. If somebody else would just take responsibility, if somebody else
Oh,
would
I'm
just
not
take
saying
action.
somebody else altogether, but
No,
aren't they part of
no, right?
the smart
Yeah, but
solution?
we can't control them. We can't control them. I mean, it's like, this thing at Fleet Farm where, the straw purchaser. I can't control that. But what I can do, and what each one of us on this podcast can do, is ask, and we can ask our friends to ask. Okay. So there's things we can do that will make a difference.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Kathleen.
That's to answer your question too about the point of sale. There are, security gun storage is supposed to be covered in gun safety classes and permitting classes. It's the issue is that there's no universal standard across all points of sale about what you're supposed to do. And so there are certainly responsible gun stores and shooting ranges and such that try to emphasize this message, that certainly take firearm suicide risks, as Barry alluded to, very seriously, and do pass on that information. We do have partnerships with some law enforcement officers or offices across the state when they're issuing gun permits, where they pass out information about secure storage. Mendota Heights is one of them. And so there are movements in different pockets with different individuals and agencies that do take this message on, but it's not universal. But the more we can get that message out and again kind of create that cultural shift, and that pressure for everybody to take this message seriously, the better. And so there is opportunity for action there. I did want to circle back quickly to Clarence's question about resistance to the message of secure storage. Dr. Kotke brought up a great one of the biggest ones that people say is that, the whole reason I have a firearm in my home is for protection and I need to be able to access it instantaneously. There are devices out there for sale that allow you to do that and do that quickly. When we table in the community, one of our groups has a biometric safe, their personal safes, and they reset the code so that they can show people just how quickly you can get into a biometric safe using a code in the event that you should need to use access your firearm quickly. Some of the resistance I get is that people saying, "My kids know better." I talk to my kids about gun safety, and my kids know better. And the doctors in the room are laughing. Parents, the parents that know anything about child development are laughing because we know that kids may hear better, right? They may have been told better, but that doesn't mean that they know better. That, the brain is just not developed to the point where they can understand the risk. Children as young as 2 and 3 can pull a trigger, often with fatal results. And so a big part of our training when I do my free presentation in the community is time permitting, I actually like to start with a grounding exercise where I ask everybody to imagine, think back to their own childhood and teenage years, and think about a time when they did something that their parents had explicitly told them not to do. And Dr. Kotke, he's nodding his head because he's got his own story, right? But we hear all sorts of things when I ask people to share back. We hear about playing with broken glass, playing on railroad tracks, and then there's almost always a teenage boy who talks about getting into the liquor cabinet and then getting into the gun cabinet. And that's the thing that we want the adults in the room to start to remember, that kids do all sorts of stupid stuff because of curiosity, peer pressure, impulsivity, recklessness. And that doesn't make them bad kids. It's just part of growing up. And it's our job as adults to prevent them from having that access, not the job of impulsive, curious kids to keep themselves from getting into get accessing a gun. We don't tell toddlers, "I told you not to get into the bleach," right? Like, we lock up the bleach. And that's a big part of our message, is just like, even children that go through gun safety training courses are just as likely to touch a gun when they come home from that. Their brains just aren't developed enough to keep themselves from that compulsion. So that is a huge myth that we hear. Just my that idea that my kids know better. And what's really upsetting to me when I hear it is the sort of backhanded insinuation that a kid who does access a gun had it coming, kind of this idea that, like, especially when there's survivors in the room that are testifying on behalf of their child that they've lost due to an accident, an unintentional shooting, this idea that their kid didn't know better. And it's like, no, the adults didn't protect the children. That's what happened here. So that's my piece on that part of the resistance to that message.
Yeah, the other question is, what about the kid at that home who's from the third household or the fourth household or the fifth household? Do we know they've been, we don't. And so it's our responsibility to protect kids. I mean, that's part of the American ethos, and part of that is simply storing guns safely
And
and
hopefully it
asking.
goes beyond kids. I mean, it's for all of us, really, when you really think about it. Go ahead, Clarence.
Okay, I want to just thank you, Kathleen, for your comments. I mean, you said a couple different things that resonated with me. But you said kids do stupid things, right? Okay. But now, there are some adults, and we took a look at this and look in the in our research. It says that some adults might be think that zip lines, ropes, and strings qualifies as secure gun storage. What would you say about that?
Generally, we try to be a little bit diplomatic that the best storage device for you is the one that you're actually going to use. But that rope, zip lines, hiding—I mean, that none of those. It needs to be locked in some way. Anything that can be easily cut isn't going to prevent a resourceful teenager from getting into it. We haven't even touched on gun theft yet. But the guns, unsecured guns in cars are the leading cause of guns on the black market. And it's driving all sorts of other, car break-ins. And then the guns get into the hands of people who are otherwise barred from having them. And then they're using those guns in crimes. I mean, the add-on effects of unsecured guns is catastrophic for our country, as we're seeing. And so having a locked device, all the better if the ammunition stored separately is the gold standard for us. And the biometric ones are great because they have such instantaneous access to the person who's charged with having that gun, who's allowed to have that gun.
I thank you for that diplomatic answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I'm glad that you phrased it like that. Yeah, but I do think that people will say, like, this works just as well. You know what I mean? And I know that some of our listeners might be there, might be listening, and they may have a unique way of storing their guns, so I just think that at least enter the conversation.
And
So,
whatever
Tom,
you do.
I have a question for you, Tom. You and I, for sure, have been involved in public health issues that have a long time frame attached to them. Okay, take smoking. It took a long time. It really did. It took a long time and a really strong, concerted public health effort to have smoke-free environments, et cetera, et cetera. It took a long time to get kids in child restraint seats and people buckled up. It took, when I say a long time, it took a long time for public psyche to embrace it, okay, and be comfortable with it and know that that's just part of what we do now. What has really struck me about this topic is the immediacy, the absolute immediacy of the situation. We are seeing more and more people getting shot accidentally or what have you, daily. I mean, your numbers here indicate that. So how is it that we might be able to deal with what seemingly feels like a long haul here to get everybody on the bandwagon when we're dealing with an immediacy of a situation? Do you have any thoughts on that, Tom?
I would
Besides just starting.
wring my hands over that. It's very easy to get going. I mean, in your social network, you can protect the kids by asking, and by asking people to ask, and then it's done. You have protected the kids in your social network by being smart. Okay, and yeah, it's you know it it. Semmelweis, washing hands before delivering a baby, took obstetricians 18 years. Surgeons, clean hands, took them 25 years. Max Planck, the physicist, said, you never change anybody's mind. The old guys just die, and the young guys grow up believing in your theories. And so we can see, so we can hang the crepe around this. But the beauty of this is that we can change. We can change in our social network almost overnight, almost overnight. And I want to go back to who has a gun. I was talking to a preventive medicine doctor about this, and she said, "Oh yeah, my husband just bought a pistol." Like, oh, like that would be the last person I would believe would have a pistol in their house, but it wasn't. There's the
Yeah,
pistol.
yeah,
And
yeah.
so you never know. And so the what you need is you need to have that comeback that says, 40% of households have a pistol in them, have a firearm in them. Many of them are unsecured. I just ask, thank you very much for securing your firearm, or thank you very much for accepting my question. There's no moral. It's not a
Right,
moral
right,
question.
right.
It's
Yeah.
not judgmental like that, But I want to hear some more from Theo and what she's been up to.
Well, just to piggyback from that, I think it is an uncomfortable conversation. That's the reality. But there are lots of uncomfortable conversations, like the one you would have if they actually went to that friend's house and was harmed. or killed. That would be a very much more uncomfortable conversation to have with that parent. So you have to weigh your options. It's
That's a
not
good point.
uncomfortable to care about your kid's safety. It's not uncomfortable to ask if they have alcohol in the home and is it locked up. It's not uncomfortable to ask if they're going to be going somewhere other than. So we just have to, like Kathleen said, normalize it. Because I fear the conversation about why that kid was over there playing with a gun and now my child is dead is more uncomfortable than any other conversation we can have prior to that.
It's a good point. Really good point. Better to be proactive when there isn't, when there is no harm.
And our friend Rachel Weigert, who's a ER doc over at Children's, says the most disheartening thing in the world to hear is the wail of the parents over the body of a dead child.
Yes, yeah, I can.
You know,
Right,
and
right,
if you
right.
want to lose a friend, if you want to lose a friend, have you know, have somebody shot in your house. You know,
Right,
it's
right, right.
in remorse forever.
Barry, go ahead. And then Kathleen, go ahead, Barry.
So, 95% of gun owners are responsible gun owners. And I have to make, and actually I'm getting into proactivity here and just an idea to hear what some of the experts will say. I'd have to assume that gun owners probably would hear a message differently from another gun owner than they would from, let's say, Stan or me, who are not gun owners, going out and telling people about gun safety. Not that we shouldn't do that. So my question is, because of the so many people do own guns, I'd like to know two things. If there have been any community efforts to recruit gun owners to be sort of like, I'll call them like ambassadors or volunteers for polling within on their block, their neighborhood. And the reason why I ask that is there was an effort of a couple of years ago about storm drains because they get all muddied up with leaves and twigs and stuff like that. So our neighborhood association sent out a thing, who would like to volunteer to own one storm, you could sign up for a storm drain, and every month or so, or every few weeks, it's near your house. And they send you a bag and a shovel, and you could, scoop it up, and then quarterly you just report back. And so of course, then it gets to be a little contagious. So I signed up with one. So my name and I put these little signs out, and then my neighbor across the street said, "Well, wait, what are you doing there?" I said, "Well, I signed up for storm drains. Matter of fact, there's one across the street. Maybe you want to sign up for that." "Oh yeah, they did that." So I'm wondering if there's, because so many gun owners are responsible, aren't they a prime community resource to really be able to get the message out on a neighbor-to-neighbor basis? And if you agree with that, can you tell me if there have been any efforts that have shown ways to get that community involvement in that educational piece?
Kathleen, I'll bet you have a answer on
Yeah,
that one.
I do. And that's a great point. We talk about gun owners being the most credible messengers for secure storage. And the one of the things, so whether that's law enforcement, veterans, people who are, hunters, or do it for sport, we are always welcoming and encouraging them to center themselves in that conversation because they can practice that M, right? The modeling responsible behavior. I'm not sure where you got the figure 95% of gun owners are responsible gun owners. We believe that the majority of gun owners want to be responsible gun owners, but the figure looks more like about 50% do not practice secure storage. And so I just wanted to make sure that that was clear because we can't assume that 95% of people are practicing secure storage. It really is more half and half. But all of the leading, meaning national gun violence prevention organizations that I'm familiar with, Giffords, Brady, Everytown, have gun owners caucuses and kind of subgroups for people who identify as gun owners who are committed to common sense solutions to reduce gun violence. And so those groups exist, and any platform we have to call more gun owners to get involved in that very particular lane of the advocacy is an opportunity to take. So any gun owners that are listening, if you could please join our efforts, you really are the most credible messengers in when it comes to being responsible and taking common sense precautions to prevent gun violence in our communities. So thank you for teeing
I
that up
just
for
did, yeah, I
me.
just did easy math, Kathleen.
Oh,
I took the
okay.
5% resistors, and
Yes.
I just subtracted that from the 100%. And again, you could still be a responsible gun owner and
Well,
do what I say, not not what I do, but
yeah.
that would be more amenable,
Yes.
that they're not going to totally resist. That's just my
Sure. I just we're so focused on giving people the numbers, and I didn't want anyone's takeaway to be that, oh, well, they said 95%, so 95% of people are practicing secure storage.
No,
That's not
I
the
didn't mean
case.
that they were practicing that way, but they might be amenable
Okay.
to,
Yeah.
There are lessons learned from that though. We do know, as a matter of fact, I remember doing my doctoral work on this. We do know that modeling is important. And so for instance, parents will buckle up themselves knowing that they're modeling good behavior for their kids. Okay, so it's that same idea. Clarence, go ahead, and then Tom.
Great. Okay, so I got my gun locked up. What do I do with my ammunition?
Lock it up separately somewhere else in the house.
The idea is not
So,
having it in the same, like if you have a lock
right.
box, not having the ammunition stored next to the gun in the single lock device. So even just having it stored separately and differently separately in the house
Now,
is a barrier.
there is a spectrum. I mean, we like locked separately, both locked. If and this may be, well, I just am not comfortable having an unloaded firearm in that lockbox. Okay, that's not ideal, but it's a heck of a lot better than having it in your desk drawer. I wanted to go back to Barry with a couple of things. One, we can I own a gun. I have a rifle. It's up at the lake. It's locked. It's got a trigger lock on it, and so I'm one of those beasts that own guns. Where we connect socially is we're all parents or grandparents, and we can act. That's our social network. Okay. And whether or not we own a gun. And I really, you can tell I really bristle at this idea of let somebody else do it. Okay. If we all take a little action, ask to ask, we can solve this problem. We don't have to rely on anybody else. We can in our social networks, we can solve this problem of unsecured firearms. But
We all own it. We all own the
we
problem.
don't own it. But what I like about Barry's example is this diffusion of innovation that when you see other people doing it, you do it. People like me lock up their guns. Oh, I better lock up my gun or I'm going to be embarrassed the next time I go to a party and somebody says, "Hey, do you lock up your guns?" Oh, hell no. I tell my kids, stay away from them, And then, And so it's this diffusion of innovation, of modeling, and that's and what we've been hearing is this is not should not be an embarrassing situation, an embarrassing conversation. It's just part of a safety check. We all do safety
Exactly.
checks, and we do see this, car seats, smoke free seat belts. Culture does change. It can
Absolutely.
change for the better.
You know, as grandparents, it's really interesting. So when our grandkids come to the house, all of a sudden, with this kind of this sixth sense kicks into gear. And so it's like, okay, all the cabinets where all the poisonous liquids and all that kind of stuff, let's make damn sure they're locked up. Or the electrical outlets. Let's make
Yep.
sure that all of them have, plugs in them. Or corners of furniture. Let's make sure that, because
Yeah.
they're all toddling, walking around, so they don't knock their heads on the corner of. We do these things as far as safety is concerned. Okay, one more. One more. It's kind of like, in my mind, it should be a slam dunk. So, Thea, tell me a story. From the minute somebody comes in, I know you see these people in the hospital. Tell me from, hopefully it's a brighter outcome, but a typical story that you run into in dealing with this in a hospital setting. I think it's important for people to hear this.
I think the most important part to hear is the aftermath of, a child getting hold of a gun or being in the direction of a gun that someone else is holding irresponsibly. When they come into that ED, you see a whole team of medical staff trying to save this child's life. You are outside with the family. And they're anticipating answers, and they want good answers, and it's not always good.
Right.
And you are stressed for the parents because you want the outcome to be good too. And when it's not, the aftermath is so sad. It's people wailing. It's people emotionally just can't handle themselves, falling out, like some people even throw up. It's so sad to watch the aftermath of those kind of situations. And even if the child survives for a few days later, there's family coming in to visit, there's people flying in from out of town. So just imagine like how it affects the entire family. It doesn't just affect the nuclear family, it affects everyone. And it's very sad to watch. It's emotionally draining. And yeah, it's a hard job, but we do it because we want to see these numbers go down. We don't want to see another child come in with that situation and have to give resources to the family, purchase coffins. It's sad. And that's one thing that we do get therapy, and we have resources to help us, deal with those situations, but we offer the same to our clients who come in, but it's just sad. It's sad as a whole to watch, and it's so preventable. And I think making the conversation normal, like if we're going to be gun owners and we want to, have our rights and things like that, then we should be able to speak about safety and how to, and preventable things. And that's normal. And I just want it to be a normal conversation and not something that people are ashamed of or want to hide.
Well, if I could, I'd put my arms around you for doing the work that you are doing. As sad as it is, I hope people realize that you're helping. You're really helping.
So,
This,
Stan, th this
yeah.
is an outtake, but you really should. You need to do a health chatter on gun violence interrupters, the
Okay.
community
All right.
programs.
Okay. All right. So, firearm storage. It's okay to ask.
No.
Do it. Diffuse the message more and more. Model the behavior, and be smart. And really, really be smart. I encourage our listening audience to check out our website. We've got background research on this. On the front end of the show, I forgot to mention Human Partnership is our community sponsor. They're an incredible organization that does excellent work, not only this kind of thing, but many, many others. Check them out at humanpartnership.org. Check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. I want to thank our guest. You're second to none for doing the work that you do. And hopefully with this, we'll be able to spread the message even more. For our listening audience, our next show will be on veterans' health, which should be interesting to see what our veterans are dealing with. In the meantime, everybody, keep health chatting away.